Here for our final hour, we've got something different, something special. We don't get all that many in-studio guests here at the Fan, and we sure as hell don't get them on Saturdays. Weekend in-studio guests are very few and far between, but Gary said to me earlier, listen, I got a buddy who could come on, and he'd even be willing to swing by because he's in the area. So joining us now is sports orthopedist from Mount Sinai and South Nassau Hospital. He has operated with and done work for and with several professional athletes here in New York over the years. Chances are the guys we're going to talk about today he hasn't had the chance to individually see, but certainly knows everything about sports injuries. Dr. Eric Freeman joins us on the Fan. Doc, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Jody.
Eric, let's just start off with Didi Gregorius and needing the Tommy John surgery. Fortunately for the Yankees, it's not his throwing elbow, unlike Gleyber Torres. It is his throwing elbow. I'm sorry. Gleyber Torres was not his throwing elbow. What kind of prognosis would you have just based on your experience? How long it should take him to come back? He's not a pitcher, but he still has to throw the ball.
So, again, I have not had the opportunity to individually treat him. However, in looking back historically at his situation, back in 2012, he apparently did partially strain this ligament, and it's called the ulnar collateral ligament, Gary, on the inner side of the elbow. And what happened at that time, he apparently had a partial tear, and this was a known commodity when he came over to the Yankees. He apparently also had an injury to his same side wrist sliding into home plate a couple of weeks back, had an injection, and we can theorize that possibly he was altered his biomechanics of his throwing motion and then severed this ligament further. The prognosis for a throwing athlete on the dominant arm is very different than Gleyber Torres, as you suggested, who I believe was out for about 8 or 9 months. In this case, oftentimes it can take over a year. And again, we're looking at the Mets have an infielder similar to this, TJ Rivera, who I believe had surgery last September, who never saw the playing field all year long. So I think it's optimistic to think he's back by the All-Star break. However, again, each case is different, but it's atypical to expect to return within a year.
And I'll give you a different case because it had always been my belief, if you've got a partial tear, it's eventually going to become a full-time tear. You can't continue to play and think that it's just going to be able to rehab itself and without actually going in and doing a surgery. But that's exactly what they've done with Masahiro Tanaka. He was Tommy John waiting to happen, and it's never happened. And he has been able to recover and continue on and the like. I guess they've already announced that he is definitely having the Tommy John surgery, or is there a possibility that they would look to do the same with a guy like Gregorius and hope that he can play it? Is there a percentage on the tear that you would look at to make a determine as to how quickly or if you can get by without Tommy John surgery?
Well, typically, again, an overhead throwing athlete, with a complete tear, it's inevitable that you have surgery. There are cases where if you have a partial tear and you're not symptomatic, meaning the elbow is not unstable, you can live with it. And again, I think Ohtani was another example of an athlete that they played around with for a significant period of time, who I believe now is also undergoing Tommy John surgery.
He's going to have it.
So
I was going to ask you if they should sign Manny Machado, but we asked that of John Harper a couple hours ago. So you think there is a possibility? Now, he made a couple bad throws in the playoffs. So you think because the wrist somehow is connected to the elbow, I guess, there's got to be, I can't say there's got to be, but you would surmise that one could have led to the other.
It's possible that biomechanically, again, if you're wrist extension, and that's what you're required to do to throw a baseball, is altered, you would have to alter potentially the throwing angle on the elbow. And again, I haven't studied the film, but there's a possibility that inflicted a little more damage. Who knows, maybe when he slid into home plate, he not only jammed his wrist, he could have injured his elbow as well, and it was just, as Jody said, a time bomb.
Dr. Eric Freeman here with us in studio, sports orthopedist here with us on the Fan. From time to time, we need to or attempt to play doctors on the radio, which is almost always a bad idea. Glad we have someone like you who actually knows what they're talking about in here. David Wright, with the injury that he had, came back and played, got to do his swan song, got to go out the way he wanted to go out, the way Met fans wanted him to go out and the like. But it's rather obvious that he probably shouldn't have been playing, that he played solely so he could go out the way that he wanted. How much with the injury that he had, and again, you haven't specifically had a chance to examine David, but from what you know, what you read, any experience you've had with the injuries that he was suffering from, how much of a chance did he take on potentially hurting himself and affecting the rest of his life thereafter?
So most of the spinal stenosis, which is what David Wright, again, I believe, had both in his neck and his back, is seen in the research he's done in football players, both NFL and college players. And that being said, without a direct contact, although it may have taken him 2 hours to get ready to play the game, unless he had a collision, he probably was not at risk in a one or two game situation.
Diving for a ball, that's probably the most at risk he could put himself. There was a play, he knows he doesn't really want to dive for a ball, but the instincts take over. There's a ball to his left, and he goes headlong for it. He couldn't have done enough damage that he could have severely injured himself?
Again, the definition of spinal stenosis can be very broad-ranging, from a very minimal amount to a very significant amount, and predicated on how much that was. Yes, if in fact he had significant stenosis, he could have caused himself further injury with a dive.
I've always heard that spinal stenosis can be genetic or hereditary. We don't know in this case, but can the torque that a player puts his body through swinging the bat, could that be the cause of spinal stenosis, or is this something that you're predetermined to have?
So it's a combination of both genetic predisposition and the actual, what we call in vivo playing, Gary. And repetitive torque, trauma during playing, a simple slide, something like that, could have been the straw that broke the camel's back. But certainly there is typically a predisposition to this condition.
All right, staying with New York sports, important individuals are dealing with injuries. Kristaps Porzingis. We just had Frank Isola on earlier. We asked about when, where, how, and why. Could the Knicks get Porzingis back? He will dictate whether this is just a building year or maybe a year that they can make a push for 500. The injury that he has, the prognosis, what would be a realistic, optimistic look at when Porzingis can be back on the floor for the Knicks?
So unlike what we were just discussing, spinal stenosis and injuries of that sort, an ACL tear, which is the ligament that connects the thigh bone to the shin bone, is typically a non-contact injury. We see on the football field a twisting injury or on the basketball court where there is no contact. The problem you have with someone like KP, who at his height and weight, is that there is a risk that there's increased torsional force. And torsional force means twisting force, rotational force, demands on a leg. Typically, the average player would return to playing 9-10 months out in a professional sport such as this. However, with the dynamics and the size and the girth of this player, you're looking at uncharted territory, and you're probably looking at more towards a year at the bare minimum that you would suspect to see him back.
Eric, taking the size part of it out of the equation for a second, is a basketball player more at risk for re-injuring it or injuring it in the first place because of just the nature of the sport than, say, a football player or a baseball player?
So, again, it's hard, Gary. The mechanism of injury is a plant and twist that's a rotational injury without contact. So basketball players, it's very common in basketball, very common in soccer, very common in football, and actually, ironically, more common in young females. We see a 2-to-1 ratio oftentimes in females versus males, because the region where the ACL is in the knee, without getting too technical, has a narrowed area, almost like spinal stenosis in females, and puts the ACL at greater risk. And there's also been some studies on estrogen cycle that have really not been proven. But ironically, females are more predisposed. I don't know that there's a vast percentage of basketball versus football, but they both are at risk.
Fair enough. All right, last one for me. If it's a professional athlete that you work with, a collegiate athlete who someone's name might recognize, that's fine. If it's not, if it's just Gary Myers, perchance, because I know you certainly did some work with Gary, who made the most amazing recovery as far as you saw them, you diagnosed them, you checked them, you did your x-rays and MRI, and you laid it out for them as to what you thought was optimistic for them to be able to rehab
that
and come back?
That answer's got to be me. I broke my ankle in two places and tore ligaments, and he kept me out of the operating room.
If not Gary Myers, no. If it's Gary, say Gary. Who's the most amazing patient you ever had?
Well, now that we're not violating HIPAA and Gary's declared himself my patient, Gary, in fact, the story with Gary was amazing and shows his dedication. Gary was on the way to Buffalo for a seemingly meaningless Jet.
No,
Buffalo
no, it
game.
Wasn't meaningless with the playoffs.
Oh, it was the
line.
Playoff game. Sorry, I was trying to give you even more credit, Gary. it was a game, and he calls me up and he says, I think I stepped off a curb. My ankle doesn't look so good. What do you think I should do? I said, I don't think you should go to Buffalo. He says, I got to. And then 3 days later, you know, Gary came and saw me and had a horrible ankle fracture. Gary had an excellent recovery without surgery. In terms of amazing recoveries, you know, we always like to think as surgeons that we're so terrific and we have wonderful hands and surgeries. Patients respond well to surgery, but as a generalization, Jody, the patients that please me the most are the ones that we don't have to operate on. And the human body never seems to impress us, you know, more as surgeons, that the ones that we don't have to operate on and take the conservative approach and people heal and we avoid surgery, those are the ones that really impress us the most.
Just to give Knick fans a little optimism here, it used to be if a player, basically in any sport, would tear his ACL, it was almost, I won't say the end of his career, but certainly they never really came back to what they were before. Medicine is certainly, and technology has improved so much over the last 20 years. Would you anticipate that once Porzingis gets back on the floor, and providing that the Knicks are conservative in the approach and don't let him back until he's 100% ready, would you think Knicks fans can count on seeing the KP that they saw the first couple of years?
In answer to your question, absolutely. With the surgical techniques that are being utilized and the rehabilitation, which I'm sure he's undergoing, there's no reason to suspect that he will not be 100% when he's ready. The only thing we always worry about is pushing an athlete too quickly to go back too quickly. And the Knicks have an excellent team of physicians who I'm sure are all over this, and he will not come back until they feel that it's safe and the big picture and not the short picture is being looked at.
Gary's question gave me one more question. I was going to wrap up on Gary being your greatest patient ever, but since he talked about the advancements in surgery and coming back and being the level you were once at, I know for a fact, I've been told that certain young men, like before the age of 17, 18, had elective Tommy John surgery, that the surgery had gotten so good that they felt that they needed to have Tommy John surgery because they thought they could add 2 miles per hour to their fastball, which I think is nuts and crazy and ridiculous. I was motivated to be good too, but never that motivated, that you would have elective surgery you don't need. Has it gotten that good that you can actually say, oh yeah, he's a robo-pitcher because he's going to have Tommy John surgery?
So the prophylactic surgery like that really is not the standard of care. And I had mentioned earlier to Gary, when he was asking me, that there's really two reasons why these young athletes are getting Tommy John injuries. You look at Nolan Ryan. Why didn't Nolan Ryan, throwing as fast as he did, as hard as he did, for so many innings over so many years, not break down? And there's a couple of factors. Number one, in this day and age, you've got these young athletes that are playing on multiple travel teams, playing almost every day. One coach doesn't care about the other coach and doesn't care about the kid. And number two, it's throw hard, throw hard, throw hard at an early age. So in answer to your question, coming full circle, prophylactic surgery really should not be done unless the patient has instability and a significant tear of the ligament.
And I've heard horror stories of guys getting it done when they don't even need to. Doc, just going to cut it and then fix it and tighten it up even tighter so I can draw even harder. Great stuff. Thank you very much for coming in studio with us. We learned some stuff today. No, nobody learned anything from me or Gary the first 3 hours.
And Jody's ready to have the Tommy John surgery anytime you're ready.
Thank you, guys.
That won't be happening.